Welcome. This is William Evans, and you're listening to Shifting Gears. Our guest today is Tyler Lindsay. This is the third in a series of conversations about water and human behavior. Good to have you back again, Tyler.
Thanks, Will. It's a pleasure to be here.
We kind of ended our second conversation talking about what happens when a population outruns the carrying capacity of an ecosystem. And one possibility is we go to outer space till things calm down here.
I wouldn't characterize it exactly like that, but close enough, I guess.
Well, I'm happy to have you tune that, and then I'll pick up the other thread that I felt like we were carrying in our last conversation.
Yeah, I mean, in the simplest terms, I would suggest that the dirty technologies or potentially dangerous technologies and industrialization broadly, that if we were able to move those processes and practices off planet, it would allow the natural processes of the planet to rejuvenate themselves.
Well, let me, I guess, get tangled up in this.
And so we would still be here. It would just be, you know, instead of strip mining mountains for the rare earth minerals that run our cell phones, we would strip mine asteroids for that.
Why do we want to continue these unhealthy practices?
Well, so we ended off talking about technologies for human organization to broadly coordinate and avoid the sort of win-lose game theoretical dynamics that we were talking about in the part of the conversation about the James Karst book, Finite and Infinite Games. And this coordination is very difficult because if you coordinate all but a single individual in, healthful, sustainable practices, and that remaining individual behaves selfishly, that individual ends up winning in comparison to the rest of the people in the system. And that comparative advantage that individual enjoys is attractive to anyone else. And so there's a wonderful essay on the blog Slate Star Codex called Meditations on Moloch. And it's all about this sort of Nash equilibrium that emerges where competitive dynamics inevitably result in a omni-lose-lose scenario. So, while I agree with you that the scenario of moving these heavy and dangerous industrial processes off planet sounds a little bit far-fetched, I would suggest to you that to me it feels less far-fetched than this idea that we could organize all of human society into a new omni-win-win game, at least in the short term.
Well, I think there's an alternative to going to outer space, and I think it will happen, but that's my bias, and that is I don't see how we can avoid having a lot of folks not make it with the way we're behaving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an opening where I think that we can have an alternative way of being that is not combative and competitive to the degree where we kill our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, I would suggest that the Iroquois Confederacy consisted of people who, with some divine inspiration, figured that out.
So they had a technology for social coordination called a constitution, right?
And they had something else.
Mm.
they had a form of leadership that was distinct from the one we operate with.
Can you describe it for me?
Yes, yes. And there was an attempt to share that with some of the early people who landed. And that is that they had a circle of wise grandmothers of all ages, and they had a circle of wise grandfathers of all ages. So the men and women were in a partnership around the children, looking out into the future for seven generations. And that's one of the things that when we, as Europeans, and I use the word we because I'm of European ancestry.
As am I.
Stepped ashore, we weren't able to hear that.
Hmm.
We'd come out of basically a patriarchal educational and employment experience. And I think that there's some, as I work with water, I'm impressed with both the men and the women who have realized water is life and that it touches everyone in the realm of public health in all species and all plants. And it's not benefited by private for-profit interests that want to divert it or use it as a dump.
Right. So when we talk about the contrast between the Iroquois circle of wise elders and the more hierarchical patriarchal systems that are our European heritage, what we're talking about broadly are technologies for social organization beyond the traditional tribal scale of 150 or so individuals. And you know, so the question is, what new emerging technologies for social coordination can we identify that hold some hope of solving this with a minimum of human and environmental suffering and violence?
I would suggest to you that it's not a technological breakthrough as much as it is a remembering of who you really are and your authentic identity at the place where there's this convergence of the great need for healthy, loving behavior on the planet and your potential and unique resources to step into that.
Perhaps we need to broaden our definition of the term technology, because when you described the Council of Wise Elders, that practice is a human invention. And the human invention got us into this mess. But I think that it's probably the best thing for carrying us through this mess also. So most of the problems that we face right now are problems that are born of the last generation of technologies and practices.
Those are certainly some potent ones in terms of toxicity and hormonal disruption.
Right. And I think a lot of the solutions to those are potentially found in the next generation of technologies and practices.
Do you see evidence of humans doing that?
You know, I do. And again, I think a lot of the things that I might cite will, at first glance, you know, be jarring. In the same way that sort of this you know, off-planet idea, you know, has been.
well, jar me with with a down-to-earth example.
Wikipedia. That's a communal organization of human knowledge that's very open and democratic in its allowances for contribution. Bitcoin would be another, you know, self-organizing collective intelligence that is emerging. And you know, your notion of, I forget the author who sort of said that we were at a time between stories.
Oh, Thomas Berry.
Yeah. You know, we have spent the last, four centuries or so in a story of organization that I would broadly call hierarchy.
Right. And pretty much a hierarchy that was avarice and took with no regard to violence or pollution or atmospheric consequences.
I would agree with that. Yeah. And we've obviously, or well, maybe not obviously to everyone, but it feels like it's obvious to you and I that we've come to the end of the utility of that technology for organization.
Oh, I think it's going to take us down.
Yeah.
And so I would go back to remembering.
Mm-hmm.
And remembering what it was like when you went on your first outdoor ed trip at Aspen Community School.
Yeah.
And connected out there with the rhythm of the earth and the sky and the sun and the moon and the water flowing out of the creek that you drank out of.
Mm-hmm.
And remembering that is the doorway to remembering who you really are. And without that,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but do you imagine a scenario where our civilization makes it through this crisis without, you know, genocidal die-offs?
Without?
You know, these mass die-offs.
Oh, gosh. I don't try and speculate, but I have to pay attention to what I see happening. And it doesn't look encouraging to me.
Yeah.
I think that I don't like to use labels carelessly, but I see a level of immaturity and foolishness, and particularly in relation to my favorite subject of water, contempt for water and contempt for the sky and how we use that as a dump for the waste products of fossil fuel combustion, that we're going to pay a terrible price to recover and survive from that. And I think that that's the opening and the opportunity for people with a level of balance and connection and maturity to educate young children in the absence of selfish brainwashing.
Right. And, you know, the I think selfish brainwashing is the correct term for the reality distortion field of television and popular culture.
I don't usually use those kind of words, Tyler.
And it's clear that model is breaking down, at the same time as we're witnessing what appears to be an ecological breakdown, we're also witnessing a tremendous breakdown in the ability of that system to engage in sense-making.
In sense-making?
Yeah. To sort of receive information from the world around you and use that information to orient yourself toward right action.
Yeah, and I think nature is full of teachers and professors.
I would agree with that, for sure. But I would also say that, given that access to nature is actually relatively scarce in our culture, that we need mechanisms by which we can translate and communicate that wisdom onto our fellow humans.
So you're back to electronic media?
I think it has a role to play, yes.
This is KDNK. You're listening to a continuing conversation with Tyler Lindsay, and we're talking about water and the future.
Yeah, and just as we thank you, Will, and just as we need to maintain the unimpeded, unpolluted flow of that life-sustaining water throughout our lands, we also need mechanisms for the unimpeded flow of truth and wisdom.
Boy, I like the sound of that. Truth. That's food. I mean, I'm nourished by truth.
Yeah, and right now, most of the volume of information that comes to us is the informational equivalent of highly sugared junk food.
I think you're right. Yes, and it will make us ugly and fat.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, you can see... you can see the obesity epidemic of bad ideas in, our presidency at the moment, being an example.
So, tremendous value for a child to be in connection with nature.
For sure.
It's the great teacher. I can jump off a rock that high and it's really fun. And when I jumped off that one, it was a hard landing. That was too high. I learned a lot about my balance. How much is enough? For disconnected people, how much is enough is a very difficult concept to get. Because when I've had enough playing in a non-contest way, and I'm just exhausted, wow, that's an incredible experience in itself, just to lay down on the earth and rest from exhaustion of play.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a series of YouTube videos that I've been working my way through by this philosopher and cognitive scientist from the University of Toronto, John Vervaeke. And the name of the series is Awakening in the Meaning Crisis.
in the meaning crisis.
Yeah.
What's the meaning crisis?
Well, it's this persistent sense of soul emptiness that we try to fill with objects or and drugs or
entertainment.
Entertainment, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting because Jung said meaninglessness is equivalent to illness.
Yeah, that resonates with me. I think a useful shorthand for finding meaning is to identify your animal nature and do things that are consistent with that. So, you know, again, looking, I think this is similar to what you keep telling me, which I agree with, by the way, that we need to engage in a sense of remembering and of engaging with ancient wisdom. And so, and sort of identify how a, you know, human would have lived prior to what we broadly call civilization. And so, you know, what feels meaningful? Well, waking up with the birds and moving your body before you eat something.
The dawn chorus.
That tends to feel meaningful.
Yeah.
Most people, I'm about to have my first child this year, and, you know, there's few things more animal than that. And, you know, people almost without exception call that the most meaningful thing in their life.
Yeah. What a blessing.
You know, certainly engaging with the pace and rhythm of nature, people find really meaningful.
Well, that's a useful place to pause and reflect about our ancestors, because they considered everybody family.
Mm.
They were in kinship with all those animals, and water is family.
Right, because everyone has to share that.
Everybody does share it.
Yeah.
And so the whole thing of responsibility that we started out in the first program and you talked about is that, you know, that's my family downstream, and I'm sending, you know, the most powerful and yet the most humble of all my relatives is the water, and it's going down there, and I don't want to put anything in there that isn't beneficial to them and promoting their health. So why would I manufacture something on this planet or another planet that is toxic to them and their offspring?
Because, well, so certainly we should be solving and mitigating the toxicity of our current generation of technologies. I have no disagreement with that. The further question becomes, though, why should we seek advancement or, you know, technology? And the answer I would offer to why is that it expands human possibility. So the author Kevin Kelly sometimes talks about, you know, what if Beethoven or Mozart had been born before the technology of the piano, and that hadn't been available for them to express their unique genius? What if the I showed you that video of my friend flying his drone in first person view.
Right.
He has a kind of genius at that, and that brings him great meaning. And there would be a sense of minor tragedy if that technology hadn't been invented in time for him to express that genius.
Yes.
So you know, for me, every new technology, and again, this is really Kevin Kelly's idea that I'm expressing, but I think I broadly agree with it. Everything we invent is 50.1% positive and 49.9% negative. And that little tipping of the scales toward betterment is because of the expansion of possibility.
Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you, Will. This was fun.
It's been an amazing series of conversations. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening. One heart, one love, we're all one people.